This podcast is sponsored by Runway, air traffic control for your mobile releases. Put your releases on autopilot. Runway will shepherd your release from kickoff to submission to release with no manual intervention. A single source of truth for your releases. Runway integrates with your favorite tools for a bird's eye view over release progress and blockers. Make your releases collaborative. Get a rich, contextualized release runbook that makes capturing responsibilities and tracking tasks crystal clear. Get more control on your releases on App Store and Play Store. Point your browser to runway.team. Thank you for sponsoring my podcast. I'm also revamping my newsletter. Check it out, appforce1.net to sign up. You can also find a sign-up link on my Twitter profile. Hi, and welcome to the 52nd episode of my podcast. My name is Jeroen Leenerts and I've been developing software for over 19 years, developing iOS apps for over 9 years, and I'm running the Dutch CocoaHeads for over 8 years. If you're an iOS app developer, you should listen to my podcast because it will keep you updated on interesting articles and events you might not have heard about. In this episode, I'm going to talk about download progress with awaited network tasks, what is a key path in Swift, unit testing weak references, retain cycles in Swift, how to launch app not immediately but launch after waiting, about phantom types, iOS architecture at Lyft, working with tab view in Swift UI, mastering control group in Swift UI, presentation tips for performing professional Swift talks, sendable and at sendable closures explained with code examples. Also, I will mention Danny's Monday morning tweet, so let's get started. Last week I went on a family vacation, so I prepared some episodes for last week. And I also promised in that episode to double up on the content this week. So I have 10 links that I want to share with you today. All in all, I think it's going to be a big change next week. And I really look forward to this new step in my career, which in part has been made possible by me podcasting. The vacation that my family and I went on was great. My two children, they really enjoyed themselves by swimming and playing a lot, and there was this play center that they really enjoyed. And my wife and I, we played a lot of board games while the kids were having a lot of fun, so that was good. If the kids are happy, then usually the parents are happy as well, and that was certainly true in our case. On the mechanical keyboards, I made a big decision for myself, at least. I'm going to go with a Kimiko PCB once it's available again. And the reason I'm doing that is because it's a German person who made his own derivative design based on two designs for PCBs that I really like. But he did an upgrade, an improvement on these two PCBs. And I really like the staggeredness. So I finally made my choice. And now it's just waiting for the item to be back in stock again. Still undecided on what exact switches I'm going to use, but I won't bother you too much with those details. Tomorrow, I'm going to go on a team outing with my current job. It's going to be, in part, my goodbye party as well at work. So we're going to go go-karting, and I'll let you guys know how I did. Probably, I'm just happy if I don't crash in a wall, really. So, not much else to mention on the personal areas. So I'll just dive in right now with the content of this week. The first article is by Sarush Kanlu. I'm really happy that he published another article again, because every time that he publishes something, I'm really happy about it, and he has a good writing form and good thoughts on many things. His article is called Download Progress with Awaited Network Task. So it's an article in the Async Await area, and Sarush wrote about how Async Await might look in Swift 5 years ago. So he's, in hindsight, looking back a bit on his earlier post and seeing how things turned out, and if it's something that he enjoys using for asynchronous programming with URL session and networking tasks. And what's really interesting about the approach that Sarush takes is that it's very easy to monitor progress of your downloads while you're doing them. So definitely have a look at this article, because there are some good things in there that might teach you a trick or two that you can use in your next bit of URL session coding. The next article is by Sarun. What is a key path in Swift? Key path is a type that represents a reference to properties. At some level, it is a kind of metaprogramming. It might not be obvious how you can fit this language feature into your code, but by learning about the key path, you open up yourself to an opportunity to improve your existing API, or even create a new one that you didn't know you could create, by just knowing about KeePath. You might not get it right away, but as you see more and more use cases, you might be able to find an opportunity to use KeePaths in the future. In the article, Sarun describes what KeePaths in Swift are and how you can use them and what role they can play within your coding. It's a bit of syntax that I'm not seeing too much in code online yet, but I do think it's very worthwhile to know more about the KeePath syntax, such that's a backslash dot and then some variable. And yeah, what's really interesting is there's some details that you need to be aware of when using KeePaths in Swift. And I think Sarun does a nice job of giving an overview and explaining what things you need to take into account when dealing with KeePaths. Also, he describes what types of key paths there are available. Yeah, a lot of stuff to unpack in the article by Sarun. And yeah, I really think it's one of those features of the Swift language that's very helpful to have in your inventory to be able to use it effectively. And I think Sarun's article is a great way to get started with this language feature. The next article is by Bruno. Unit testing weak references and retain cycles in Swift. Code that relies on memory tricks to work can be complicated, but there's a solid way of unit testing these cases. Bruno sees people wonder about this every once in a while, so he thinks it's a good moment to share the trick that he is using to achieve testing of weak references and retain cycles. It's a nice overview of doing unit testing to exercise your code to see how the memory behavior is. And you can actually be surprised by what kinds of things you can find in your own implementations. So I really think that the approach that Bruno takes can be very worthwhile, especially if you have some bit of logic that is a bit more involved, a bit more complex, and to just see whether or not you're handling your memory correctly. So maybe you read this article and you think, okay, I could use this in a specific unit test. Well, if that's the case, then I challenge you to write this unit test within the next 24 hours. The next article is by Yohi Kim. It's a very short article, but it's a nice reminder that you can prevent Xcode from launching your app immediately after pressing or hitting the run button. So what this does, it only prepares Xcode to attach the debugger once the correct process has been loaded and started in the memory of the device. It's just a little checkbox, so the article is not much more than a paragraph and a screenshot, but very worthwhile to know that you can wait for an executable to launch to start your debugging session. Now we move on to a new blog that I haven't seen before by Julian Alonso. The article is about phantom types. So it's a bit of an involved explanation about what phantom types are, but basically it boils down that you create a specific type to wrap a basic type to give some semantics to the call sites of this a specific bit of information. For instance, the example that is being used in the article is around an access token. So an access token can be just a string, or if you use a phantom type, you can actually, in all locations that you use the access token, have to deal with a struct called access token. Benefit of this is that, of course, you can more easily find the locations where you're using an access token. And this can be very helpful when you're dealing with bigger code bases. So I don't know how to describe this article, but I like the concept that was being explained in it. But I think I've seen this being used in the code that I'm working on quite actively. And it really is true that having to search for a named thing is much easier than just trying to find all occurrences of a string that happened to be an access token in this example. The next article is by Scott Berevoets. It's about the iOS architecture at Lyft. So in 2014, he joined Lyft as the first iOS hire on a three-person team. The app was written in Objective-C and the architecture had more than 5,000 line nested switch statements. The team has grown since then to 70 people and the code base is now 1.5 million lines of code. So of course, having this much code in an app requires some changes along the way, and also in a decent architecture to be able to manage these amounts of logic within your application. What's very fun about this is that Scott lays out how they've done it. They use modules and they use module types, and they have a separation of code along more like the types of code that they're writing. And they're also heavily involved in dependency injection. What I really like about the article is that it ties in with the same line of thinking that I have when working on my current code base, which is heavily invested with a tool called Twist. Twist really makes it easy to create frameworks and to create a structure of modules. yeah, I think that way of thinking is it's absolutely necessary once your code base grows beyond a certain size. And yeah, just being aware about the fact that there are things you can do to your code to structure it on a more component level can be very helpful if you ever have to deal or actually are dealing with a code base of this size. So on to the next article. This article is by Gabriel, working with TabView in SwiftUI. It's really a nice overview of how you can use TabView in SwiftUI, what the details are, what things you need to know, and how you can work with a TabView in your code. So if you want to get familiar with the TabView in SwiftUI, have a look at this article, because I think it's a complete and concise overview of the basics of dealing with a TabView in SwiftUI. Majid wrote an article on mastering control group in SwiftUI. A control group is not much else than a grouping of controls. What this allows you to do is group together specific buttons and attach titles and other metadata to these buttons that are also displayed on screen along with your controls. Grouping your components together has a number of benefits. It really shows your user interface in a hierarchical fashion that's really convenient for the user to understand what's going on. But also you can influence your components or your user interface on a control group level. The control group view is a new way to group buttons and other controls in a semantic way. And I think grouping controls in a semantic way is something you already should be doing if you want to retain some measure of control of your user interfaces. The next article I want to mention is Presentation Tips for Performing Professional Swift Talks. It's a nice overview of the process that Antoine van der Lee uses when preparing himself for a presentation. It's based on his experience most recently on Swift Leads. And what he noticed is that after being away from giving presentations for such a long time due to COVID, he was having some issues with getting back into the flow of creating a presentation again. Knowing the way Antoine likes to work, he creates notes and then at the end of his endeavor, he has his notes, and based on those notes, he can create a nice article. And this article is very helpful because there are some good tips in there on how you can prepare yourself for a presentation all the way from like the inception to all the way being on stage, doing the talk, and then also what happens after you've done the talk. He does agree that performing a talk is not easy and requires a lot of preparation. Just like with other things that you do, you have to practice and learn to get better. The article that Antoine wrote is built up from the experience at several meetups and conferences, and he hopes that it will help you have a better chance at giving a good presentation. And then the final article that I want to mention is also by Antoine van der Lee. Sendable and AdSendable closures explained with code examples. Sendable and AdSendable are part of the concurrency changes that arrived in Swift 5.5 and address a challenging problem of type checking values passed between structured concurrency constructs and actor messages. That's a lot to take in just a few words. In his article, Antoine goes over when you should be using a sendable, how you should use the sendable protocol, and the restrictions of conforming to sendable in the same source file. Finally, he mentions how you should be using @sendable. So the sendable protocol and @sendable attributes for functions make it possible to tell the compiler about thread safety when working with concurrency in Swift. Both features were introduced to reach the big goal of the Swift concurrency effort, which is providing a mechanism to isolate states in concurrent programs to eliminate data races. The compiler will help us in many cases with implicit conformance to sendable, but you can always add conformance yourself. It's a really great overview of how you can use the sendable and @sendable attribute. And it's one of those articles, again, by Antoine that you shouldn't miss and really take the time to take in and read and learn about this concept of sendable in Swift. And that's the final article for this week. So now onwards to the Monday morning tweet by Donny. There's a lot of stuff going on in the small bit of the iOS developer ecosystem that I'm aware of. And yeah, it's just a lot of people deploying and releasing apps and preparing themselves for the Monterey release later today. I'm checking my update screen every 15 minutes today. Even though I know it will be available only after 7 in the evening for me, but hey, it's 8 here, so it should be arriving anytime now. So yeah, since the messages, the replies on Donny's Monday morning tweet are so universal in what they're doing right now, it's just, there's not much to detail to explain, but There's one thing that I really liked to see, and that's by P. Knapchiak, preparing to ship a new update for the weather on the way, adding wind and gusts along the route. So it's a very fun way. You have a route, and then you can see along the way what the wind direction and the wind force is while you're traveling. I wouldn't know why I want to use this, but it's a really cool way to add annotations to a map view. So yeah, that was really nice. So, and that's it for this week. I'm a bit swamped with work at the moment, so I wanted to do a quick recording, and hopefully next time I have some more time. There was a lot of content that I needed to get through, but I do think that we'll talk again next week. And if you have any feedback, just let me know. If you want to support my podcast, have a look at my GitHub sponsor page or my pod.fan/appforce1 page. It allows you to contribute to me running this podcast for the longer duration. So have a great week, and talk to you soon. Lead Developer, best practices and tips for lead software developers. PDF, MOBI and EPUB format. appforce1.net/lead developer, all one word.